We're going to be in the book of Matthew this morning, Matthew chapter 9, verses 18 through 26, if you would like to go ahead and turn there. Matthew 9, 18 through 26, if you didn't bring a Bible, that scripture will be on the screen behind me. Cheryl and I and Corbin, we have a dog, a little pet beagle that some of you have met personally. We've talked about him before. Many of you have probably heard him on the other side of our fence. He has a nice, shrill, panicked-sounding howl that can be heard all throughout First Baptist Church Grandview's property when he gets really upset. And so if you're outside when he's upset, you've heard him. You might have thought it was a human being tortured in our backyard, but I promise it was just a beagle. Twix is his name, and Twix is starting to get a little old as far as dogs go. He's 11 years old, I think, making him 77 in dog years. Nobody take any offense to that. But Twix is a good dog. He and Corbin are really getting to know each other. Corbin is really getting to love going in the backyard and playing with him. If you've ever had a beagle, you know that it's probably one of the least dangerous dogs in the entire world. They will not harm a fly. They might lick you to death, and they might pierce your eardrums with their howling. But other than that, a perfect dog for children. Twix, however, isn't the only dog that we've had. We used to have two beagles. As a matter of fact, when we moved here, we had two beagles, Twix and Snickers. And yes, we do name all of our animals after candy bars. And so Twix and Snickers made the move to Grandview from Bront with us. Snickers was a couple of years older than Twix. And so last year, got a little sick. I had to have her euthanized, and you've been through that sort of thing. And Twix was always, of those two, he was always the happy-go-lucky one. Snickers, was a really good dog, really, really good dog, but had a little bit of the personality of a cat. You know what I'm talking about? I'm not a big fan of a personality of a cat. No offense if you're a cat person, to each his own. She had a little bit of that personality where, just kind of did her own thing, didn't really care if you were around. She was the kind of dog that was a little bit lazy and would sometimes, you've probably had these kind of dogs. They would, if they heard something or something caught their attention, instead of running around in the yard to figure it out, they would just plop down in the middle yard and bark all night long. She was one of those kind of dogs. Twix, on the other hand, he would howl when something was wrong, but he usually just kept his voice down to himself and didn't really bother anybody. Snickers was the escape artist of the two. She was older, and so she was the bad influence. Again, if you've ever had a beagle, you know that they're very good at sniffing out weaknesses in the perimeter defense. You know what I'm talking about? And they will find a way out of any fence or gate that you might have. She found a way out numerous times in Bront. We had to chase them down, and Twix was always sure to follow. He was that loyal friend of the two dogs, and they were really good friends together. And so when she was taken out of the equation, it changed his, I don't know if dogs have personalities, we'll assume that they will, it changed his personality. It changed the way that he acted, the way that he behaved. Again, he normally didn't bark at night, but there was probably a 3 or 4 month span after his buddy was no longer in the equation that he would just howl throughout the night. We would have to get up and bang on the window to ask him to be quiet, sometimes go outside and tell him to be quiet. He would, his shrillness or his howling sounded more panicked. When people would come around, this is probably when you heard him, if you heard him, was during this span, because he howled a lot during that time. And again, he had never been the escape artist on his own. He had tried to follow Snickers out when she found a way out, but he never did that on his own. But now, all of a sudden, he tried to do that. And you can go over to our house, and you see that in the back gate, he had chewed a way through it's been several months now, chewed a big hole in the gate. We had to fix it with some 2x4s, and he's getting bigger and bigger, like his owner. He's getting rounder and rounder, but he was managed to create a big enough hole in order to squeeze through. And then when he got out, he realized, I guess he's too big and too old, that he just kind of sat and waited for me to get home. So he didn't run away or anything. But he did find his way out when he had never done that before. Now, a dog certainly couldn't articulate that feeling of loneliness, but that's obviously what it was. And it was a feeling that again, I'm sure couldn't understand it in the way that a human understands or even close, but that understanding that something was amiss. Something wasn't quite right. Something was missing. Something was incomplete with the way things that should be. Now, I'm sure you've been there before, whether it's something that dramatic or something much less dramatic. Like when you get up in the morning and you're about to go off to work and you leave your cell phone or your wallet or a set of keys that you need at work or some project that you've been working on if you're going to school, some paper that you're supposed to have finished, you leave that behind and it transforms your entire day. Especially if it's something that you always have on your person, like your wallet or your phone. You go throughout the whole day knowing that something is missing, something is incomplete, something is amiss. Again, we can feel that in the trivial, and we can feel that in the very dramatic ways of life. But we also have that feeling generally when we look, or at least I do. Generally, when we look at the world around us, when we see the pace of the world, when we see, I'm not going to say seeming because I don't think it's seeming. I think it's real. When we see the real moral decline of our culture around us, even this political cycle, everything that's going on, it just seems like something is off. Does it not? Am I the only one that feels that way? It seems like something is amiss, like we're incomplete as a culture, as a people in some way. Biblically, we understand that we are, right? That there is something incomplete about who we are without God, but we definitely feel that in the culture as well, or at least I do. There's something that isn't quite right. Something is missing. Over the last several weeks, we've been going through the study Life on Mission. We've looked at this as a way to present the gospel to those who need to hear the gospel, but we're also preaching the gospel to ourselves as we go along through this series. We looked at God's design, that God has designed the world in a way that was meant for us to have communion with Him and communion with each other, and specifically us as the people of God were designed from the very beginning all the way back to Abraham to bless the world around us, or God to bless the world through us. We looked at brokenness that happens after we step out of God's design. In other words, after we sin our way out of God's design. We were supposed to be in communion with Him, but we find ourselves in that position of loneliness, brokenness. It manifests itself different ways in different people, but all of us have or will at some point come to that conclusion that on our own we are incomplete, on our own we are broken, and we come to this that we're talking about, this conclusion that something isn't quite right. We are incomplete. We are in need. Something is missing. And when we have that sense that something is missing, it pushes us to find that thing. It pushes us sometimes in a sense of desperation to figure out whatever it is that is missing. Again, think of our dog, Twix, becoming desperate to find his way out of the backyard, not knowing what's out there, just knowing that whatever it is that's missing is not in here, so it must be out there. And so, but he became desperate in order to try to figure that out. In the midst of brokenness, hopefully, all people have that same sense of desperation to figure out what it is that's missing. And in the midst of the brokenness of the world around us, we as the Church of Jesus Christ need to remind and be reminded of this thing we call the gospel. Those of you who go to Sunday school here in a few moments, you will figure out that this is the portion of this story, this Life on Mission that we will be talking about this morning. The gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ. I think sometimes in our church culture, church way of doing life, we think that the gospel is something that gets you into the faith. We think that the gospel is a sinner's prayer or accepting Jesus' sacrifice in order to cleanse you and buy your eternity in heaven. And then we're pretty much done with the gospel. We can then move on to discipleship. We can move on to learning the Bible. We can move on to all of these different spiritual disciplines, leaving the gospel behind. But that could not be further from the truth. The gospel is a part of absolutely everything we do, the good news of Jesus in the world around us. We realize that something is missing, that we are incomplete, and we take desperate measures to find what we're looking for, and that gospel is exactly what we're looking for. Jesus is exactly what we're looking for. We see that desperation in the two people that show up in today's story in Matthew chapter 9, again, verses 18 through 26. While he being Jesus, was saying these things to them, behold, a ruler came in and knelt before him, saying, my daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her, and she will live. And Jesus rose and followed him with his disciples. And behold, a woman who had suffered from a discharge of blood for 12 years came up behind him and touched the fringe of his garment. For she said to herself, if I only touch his garment, I will be made well. Jesus turned, and seeing her, he said, take heart, daughter. Your faith has made you well. And instantly the woman was made well. And when Jesus came to the ruler's house and saw the flute players and the crowd making a commotion, he said, go away, for the girl is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him. But when the crowd had been put outside, he went in and took her by the hand, and the girl arose. And the report of this went throughout all the district. Again, we see a couple of primary people in this story. We see the woman with the issue of blood that had been going through it for 12 years, and we also see this ruler. Matthew simply refers to him as a ruler. If you look at Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Matthew kind of has a condensed version of this story. Mark and Luke tell us that the guy's name was Jairus, that he was a ruler of a synagogue, an important guy. And we have both of these individuals come to Jesus in a time of need. So real quickly, I want to walk through these folks, and I want to see here in just a moment the ways that they are the same and ways that they are different. Compare and contrast them, if you will. And so we're about to do that, but again this morning I want to make sure that you understand at the forefront of our mind is the gospel and our constant need for it. One of the songs that I grew up singing, that I'm sure many of you grew up singing as well, is Jesus Saves. You know that hymn, Jesus Saves. That used to be something that we talked about a lot. Jesus Saves, Jesus Saves. I don't hear that language a whole lot in the church anymore for whatever reason. Maybe because we're trying to step away from cliches and simple ways to tell the truth, because people seem to resist those kind of pithy little sayings. But there's nothing more true that I can think of than that line that Jesus saves. And so this morning, the phrase that I want to put before you to remind us of the power of the gospel, both for those who are outside the church and those of us within the church, is that Jesus still saves, that nothing has changed. Nothing has changed from this day than the way it happened in the last great awakening or the last great revival that you got to be a part of. Nothing about the gospel has changed from the moment that Jesus ascended into heaven until today. The gospel is still the same. Jesus still saves. Although we might live in a cynical world that seems to reject that, although we might pray for people and see nothing happen, we need to be reminded today of the gospel of Jesus Christ, that Jesus still saves. Just as Jairus and the woman with the issue of bleeding did as well. Again, comparing and contrasting these two characters. Jairus, again, we know his name from the Gospels of Mark and Luke. He was probably wealthy and powerful since he was the ruler of a synagogue. He was an important man in his day. The woman with the issue of bleeding, because we know about that culture, we know that first of all, women were not looked upon as highly as men. Second of all, if someone had an issue of bleeding, they were unclean. And so this woman, and again, you've heard this articulated before, this woman was most probably a reject, probably poor, maybe alone. Terrible situation for her, especially as compared to Jairus. We see Jairus come to Jesus with an issue of life and death. His daughter has passed away. The woman comes to Jesus with an issue of quality of life, that her life has been terrible for the last 12 years, and she wants that to change, while Jairus comes to Jesus and says, my daughter has died, but I know that if you come, you will raise her from the dead. Again, Jairus comes on behalf of someone else. The woman comes on her own behalf, asking for help for herself. Now, real quickly, we see the differences between these two characters, and I think it tells us something about the gospel of Jesus Christ, and that is this: no matter your circumstance, no matter your station in life, Jesus' salvation is available to you today. And by you, I mean everyone. There is nowhere too far away. There is no station in life too small or too grand for to not have the need of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The gospel is absolutely inclusive. It's open to everyone. Now, it has an exclusive nature to it in that you have to accept it. You have to accept Jesus and Jesus alone in order to save you. But that is open. That invitation is open to absolutely everyone, no matter what station of life, no matter what quality of character, no matter how rich, how poor, no matter anything that is going on in their life. The gospel is open. That invitation is open to all. So we've talked about how they're different. How are these two characters the same? Last week, again, we talked about brokenness, about coming to that realization that we cannot do this on our own. We talked, remember the metaphor of a puzzle last week, about how we have this gigantic puzzle strewn out before us. We don't know where to begin. Both Jairus and the woman with the issue of bleeding come to Jesus broken. They have nowhere else to turn. And we can see that brokenness, Jairus' daughter dead, the woman suffering for 12 years. We can see that brokenness flesh itself out in another thing they share in common, and that is their desperation. They desperately come before Jesus. And here's how we know that they're desperate. If Jairus was a synagogue ruler, as again we know from Mark and Luke, if Jairus was a synagogue leader, then he was part of a population that by and large was opposed to Jesus and opposed to Jesus' teachings. Most of the religious authorities in Jesus' day, most of the people who had some sort of skin in the game, like authority speaking, like they benefited from things the way that they were unhappy with Jesus coming and changing the status quo completely. We're unhappy with Jesus coming and flipping everything on its head. How do we know that? Because it led Jesus to his death. The people who were opposed to him changing things pushed him towards crucifixion. Now, we know we all had a hand in that with our sinfulness, but just talking about the way things worked out politically in that time, those people that were opposed to Jesus were those people that had religious authority under the system, the way it was, the system that Jesus was trying to change. And so for Jairus to come to this man, someone who, from a worldly perspective, didn't have nearly as much authority as Jairus did. Now, again, we know and we look at it from the perspective that Jesus has ultimate authority. But in that time, as Jesus was walking around at this point in the gospel story, Jairus had more earthly authority than him, yet he comes to this man, Jesus, in need. He doesn't care about the political ramifications. He doesn't care about whether or not it makes his co-workers upset. He doesn't care about the way that other religious people look at him. He just knows, my daughter is dead. I heard about this guy who can change things, who can bring life where there is death. I'm going to go find that man. That sense of desperation. And we see that same desperation with a woman with the issue of bleeding. Again, I told you, from a biblical standpoint, from an Old Testament standpoint, anyone who had this issue was considered unclean. And if you were unclean, you weren't supposed to be around the clean people. You weren't supposed to be around anybody else because you would make them too unclean, and you would just ruin everybody's chance to come before God with a sacrifice or some sense of worship. Everyone would have to go through the rituals to become clean again. And so again, those of you who have heard about this clean and unclean, you know that many times when someone was unclean, they would have to announce it as they approached, unclean, unclean, so that everyone would know. We sense and see the desperation of this woman and the fact that she takes the risk of being ridiculed by the crowd that is coming to Jesus. There's no telling what they would have done to her had they known that she was unclean. Yet she maneuvers her way into that crowd. I can only picture it, imagine it as a mob kind of thing. You know, when you're waiting in line at an amusement park or at a big sporting event, there's just this mass of people that almost becomes an organism in itself. You know what it's like to be in that crowd. I can sense her pressing through that just to get close to Jesus. Again, a powerless woman all by herself that if she were found out would be ridiculed, if not something much worse. They were both incredibly desperate, broken and desperate, but also they both have bold, complete, amazing faith in Jesus. Both of them simply put it to Jesus that they know he can fix the problem. Jairus says, if you just come and lay your hand on my daughter, I know that she will live. The woman thinks to herself in Matthew's gospel, if only I touch his garment, I will be made well. Notice the certainty that they have about what Jesus can do to change and better their situation. I know that you will make her live. I know that you will make her well. She thinks to herself, the woman with the issue of bleeding, I know that he will make me well, make me whole. And then because of their faith and because of Jesus's goodness, they are both made whole by Jesus in much different ways. Jairus's daughter is raised from the dead and his family is made whole again. Some scholars believe that this was Jairus' only daughter. And so Jesus comes into this setting and makes that family that would have been incomplete, makes them complete again. And with a woman with the issue of bleeding, she touches Jesus' garment, the hem of his robe, as has been so eloquently put by others, and immediately she is made well. Immediately, Matthew says, she receives that healing. She receives that completeness. And so they're in a broken world, broken themselves, desperate to find a way out of their brokenness, know that something is wrong in their life, something is missing, something isn't quite right. They desperately seek out the one person that can fix that situation. They have faith in his ability to extend healing, to make things right and whole again. And Jesus comes through on that faith and changes their entire situation for the better. Jesus still saves. You know that word, save? From a biblical standpoint, the Greek word there is sozo. I know that doesn't mean anything to you, doesn't need to mean anything to you. But the reason why I bring that up is because that word means a whole lot more than what we say when we mean save. What we say when we mean save is like somebody that's on the brink of death. We save them when we bring them out. Think of like somebody who's being rushed away in a flood and somebody throws a life saver to them and they are pulled out of that flood and they are saved from something, saved from certain death. But in the Jewish sense or the Greek sense of that word, this word to save was something much bigger. As a matter of fact, in my English Standard Version, when it says that Jesus made the woman well, it says made well three times in a couple of verses close to each other. She believed that if she could just touch his garment, she would be made well. Jesus told her, your faith has made you well, and then immediately she was made well. That word, made well, is that same word that means saved. It's that same sozo word. And this word in the Greek, it comes with a sense of being made whole. Being made complete. It's similar to the Jewish concept of shalom, which again, we in our English language, we just understand that as peace, right? Which means maybe the absence of conflict in our language. But in the original understanding of those words, it meant a wholeness to life. It meant something that was incomplete being made complete, something that was broken being mended, something that was sick being made well. It extended beyond just being saved for eternity. It meant something changed in our very nature right here and right now. The reason why I think Matthew squished these stories together through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit is to show us that Jesus' salvation is not just for life after death, but it's for an abundant life here today. It's for a changed, complete, made whole life here today. Jesus was on his way to resurrect somebody from the dead, and he stopped to take care of a quality of life issue for a woman who was in desperate need. This woman had had that problem for 12 years. She could have survived a little while longer without it. But Jesus stopped in the middle of going to bring someone life, even though they were dead, in order to help this woman with an ailment. Jesus' salvation, the gospel of Jesus Christ, is not just, hey, you get to go to heaven when you die. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not just thinking about where I'll be by and by. It's about what Jesus does today. Right here, right now. The gospel of Jesus Christ makes the broken whole. The gospel of Jesus Christ, when we know that something is amiss, completes that which is missing in our life. Those of you who came to faith later in life, I'm sure that you remember that feeling, especially as an adult, to the point where you could articulate it. If you came to faith younger, you might not have been able to articulate it. But later, I'm sure you had that feeling that something was not right. Something was missing. And it was more than just having assurance about where you were going after you die. From an eternal perspective, that's the most important thing. I understand that. But from today and the perspective in which we look at it today, salvation goes beyond that. Salvation affects every aspect of our lives, both in the present and in eternity. As we look at it through this lens of life on mission, salvation is a reinstatement of God's design within us. Again, God has designed us a certain way. We sin our way out of that design into a place of brokenness. And story, God comes back in to reinstate that design within us and to put us back to where we were meant to be all along. We don't deserve it, but Jesus freely gives us that opportunity. Those of you who have a smartphone and you got to the point where it like stopped working. Anybody have an iPhone or a Samsung or anything that it just like stopped working at some point? Nobody? All right, I guess I'm the only one. I need to get on y'all's cell phone plan. Maybe you've had a computer, the same thing. Maybe I'm talking to the wrong crowd. Is your abacus working correctly? I don't know what to say to you. But, you know, when you have a computer issue or a phone that stops working, it has that blank screen that comes up. Apple, one thing that Apple will do with my iPhone is it will create restore points. You know what I'm talking about? Like it will save a picture of exactly what's on your phone and all the software and the hardware, everything that's there. It will create a big file that is a restore point. And if the phone, because I'm trying to update it or I put a new app on it that corrupts the files inside of it, if all of that happens, I can go back, plug it into my computer, and it can take it back to that restore point. If you've ever had a virus infect your computer, if you had that restore point on your computer, you could go back and undo all of the damage that you had done or that virus had done and go back to a way things used to be at that restore point. That's what God does through us with the gospel. All of us are broken, no longer working, and he takes us back to this original design, this restore point, perfect communion with him and communion with others. Just the way he designed it to be in the beginning. This is the gospel of Jesus Christ. The good news that no matter how broken we are, God still saves. Jesus still saves. The last verse that I read, verse 26, it says that this report spread throughout the district. What Jesus did for Jairus and the woman with the issue of bleeding was so amazing that people couldn't help but talk about it. If you read the other gospels, Jesus even tells them, be quiet about it. But of course they're not. They have to tell other people about what happened. They have to share this story. And the disciples and the others, the crowd that was around Jesus and saw these things take place, because of what they had seen, they had to tell the story. Jesus still saves. This morning I have a simple question for you. What's missing? Are you walking around right now feeling like there's something amiss, something missing? If you are, it might be because you need to know Jesus is Lord and Savior, because you need to accept this gospel for the first time. Are you broken? God can make you whole. And during our time of invitation or after church, I can show you how that can happen. Talk to a Christian that you know. They can show you how that can happen. Maybe people you love are broken and you're broken over that. People you love are outside of the gospel. God can make them whole as well. You can go to God just like Jairus did for his daughter and say, Jesus, if you would just come, something would happen. I know that they have to accept it, but God, would you please move and allow something to happen in this person's life? But chances are, especially in this early service, you are here this morning with a relationship with Jesus Christ. So let me ask that question in a different way. What's missing? You know that term evangelical that like characterizes who we are as a people, who we are as a church? A term that it's one of the great linguistic tragedies of the modern era is that term has been stolen to be used as some political interest group. When evangelical, people who love the good news. That's what it should mean. People who spread the good news. Is that descriptive of who you are as a Christian? Is the gospel something that you preach to yourself? about your own situations, that the gospel can fix whatever brokenness you find yourself in the midst of? Is the gospel something you preach and share to others? That no matter the brokenness that you see around you, you know that God can bring healing, that God can make the broken complete. Are we evangelical? If we're not, something is amiss. Something is missing. And if we as the church, if one of the primary characteristics of the church is not that we are evangelically spreading the gospel of Jesus Christ, then something within the modern church in the United States of America today is broken and in need of healing. And so maybe our prayer needs to be that Jesus, just as we've been praying all throughout the life of the church, would raise up people who would come to the fields that are white with harvest, and that we might be that people. Are you evangelical? This morning, I want you to think about that during this time of invitation. I want you to imagine what it would be to share your faith. We've looked at ways you can do that so far about God's design. God has a design for the world. You can share that with people. We've looked at brokenness, that God can use your brokenness for good to minister to somebody else in the midst of brokenness that is similar to what you have experienced and God has led you through. And if you come back next week, we're going to look at a way we could put this all concisely, even write it on the back of a napkin, so that we can share this truth with people that God, the gospel of Jesus Christ, is that God comes into a broken world and offers to fix it, offers to mend it, offers to give us completion where we are incomplete, to make us whole again, to save us, because Jesus still saves. If you doubt that, if the world around you makes you feel like that's not the case, I want to tell you soundly that it is. We know it is. Just last month, we had a disciple now in which 13 kids got saved. Jesus still saves. Just because we don't see it as much, just because we are a cynical people, does not mean that it is not the case. Jesus still saves when we preach and when we live the gospel. Are we evangelical? Are you evangelical? If you need to pray about this or anything else, I will be here to do that with you this morning. The altar will be open if you would like to pray there. You can also find me after the service if you would like to talk then. Let's stand together. I'm going to pray. Bill and Lynn are going to lead us in our song of invitation, and you move in whatever way God is calling. Father, we thank you so much for this morning. God, we thank you for your Spirit being present and with us today. And God, we thank you for the good news. God, we thank you for what it's meant for each of us that have accepted it. And God, if there is anyone here this morning who has not accepted this good news, God, may you move in them and call them home and give them that opportunity once more. And Lord, those of us who understand and have accepted this good news, God, I pray right now, everyone in this building, that you remind us yet again of how good that news is, to the point that we cannot help but tell other people about it. God, raise up in us a church and a spirit that is evangelical, that tells the good news. Thank you for still saving. I pray that in Jesus' name. Amen.